All right, 10th Amendment Center, guys. How you doing?
Oh, hello. Yeah.
So why don't you guys give us an update on just kind of a general update on the state of nullification movements? What is some important bills going on at state houses that people should keep an eye on, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so we're pretty excited. So this is kind of getting into what we like to call nullification season, which is when most of the state legislatures are in session. So they'll start ramping up here this week, and running up and through April is when we'll do most of our work on the legislative side. I think the thing that I'm kind of most excited about this year is the Defend the Guard bill, which is a piece of legislation which would require governors to withhold allowing National Guard troops to be deployed unless there is an actual declaration of war by Congress, or it is one of the three criteria that the Constitution sets out to deploy the militia. And we're already starting to get some pushback from the National Guard itself, particularly in North Dakota. And I think we had some back and forth on Twitter with the Kentucky National Guard.
Their official spokesperson. Of course, they all give the same kind of thing. They're concerned. I know you guys are. We don't want to go too much into Defend the Guard because I know you guys have a few people coming up next to talk about that. But it is essential if we're talking about defeating the empire. Most people spend all of their time basically asking the empire to stop doing stuff that the empire shouldn't be doing in the first place, which is like basing people around the world, murdering people around the world, stealing all your money to pay for it. James Madison, of course, warned us that war is perhaps the greatest threat to liberty because it comprises the germ of every other. He said war is the parent of armies, and from armies you get debts and taxes, and armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for putting the many under the domination of the few. So although everything that we do by using decentralized tools to nullify centralized power is chipping away at the empire, of course, well, the hardest thing may be defeating the warfare state itself. And that's why Defend the Guard is so important. It's a piece of legislation that we drafted back in 2010, modeled off of some Cindy Sheehan kind of leftist type of version. And then in 2015, Pat McGeehan came along in West Virginia and helped improve it and really became the champion of that. And of course, we know bringourtroopshome.us is really the on-the-ground activist organization pushing to get this legislation introduced in probably a couple of dozen state houses. But, you know, we've also got, and Mike and I just finished actually wrapping up our annual State of the Nullification Movement Report. What?
Which Mike?
There's only us.
Both of us.
Come on. I have a little narcissism thing here. So if I'm talking about something, it's me or my buddy Meharry. So there's another Heist. I guess he's cool too.
He's all right.
I'm trying, man.
We love you, man. We love you. But Meharry and I, we just wrapped up our annual State of the Nullification Movement Report. And it's 230 pages. We're going to have it published sometime this week at 10thamendmentcenter.com/report. If you want to read the old version, a lot of the info there is the same. But basically, we cover not just the strategy of how to defeat federal programs without relying on the government to somehow magically limit its own power. We could focus on what James Madison said, which is a refusal to cooperate with officers of the Union. That's how you defeat the feds. Or what Lysander Spooner said a century later almost. And he basically told us in 1850 that the right of the people to resist an unconstitutional law is absolute and unqualified from the moment they pass it. So whether it is a federal gun control measure all the way back to 1934 or the most recent ones in 2018 and this last summer, or the new ones, the so-called ghost gun ban that they want to have in there, you got to have it registered and background check. A refusal to cooperate on a state, a local, and individual level is how you defeat these things. And so we're working to implement that thing against gun control, against the drug war, against federal militarization of police, against civil asset forfeiture, warrantless surveillance, the empire, against the Federal Reserve, everything and anything. We just don't have enough person power to do everything, but you really got to nullify everything. And I guess maybe you'd be wrong 5% of the time, so not bad.
Yeah, and you know, I think what's important for people to wrap their heads around is the fact that the reason this works, the strategy that Madison gave us, a refusal to cooperate with officers of the Union, the reason it works is because the officers of the Union need state and local cooperation to do pretty much everything they do. go back to 2013 when we had the, you know, the so-called government shutdown. The
they never shut down the warfare state, though, right?
No, or the surveillance state.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, none of that.
None of that. But the National Governors Association pretty much said, no, of course, they were trying to say, oh, we got to get the government open. But, you know, they said that the state and local governments are partners in most federal programs, most federal operations. So that means that if you withdraw support, we can basically hinder, if not shut down, most federal programs. So that's really what's behind our strategy. It's an Achilles heel that the feds have that we're taking advantage of. And it works because the feds need that cooperation and support.
Yeah, let's talk about federal gun control, for example. Especially since we have that new regulation that just came in this past week, where they just put out this open letter, whatever, to FFLs. I mean, the whole thing, the ATF shouldn't exist in the first place. But if you think about it, the feds, the ATF has somewhere between 5,100 and 5,500 employees for the entire country. About a third of them are in administration. I went to government school, so I don't know how to do math without a computer. What is that, like 25, 2700? I don't know what the number is. But whatever, however many left are in enforcement agents, maybe it's like 3,000 of them. And year in and year out, they have the capacity to close with that person, that workforce, somewhere between 8 and 10,000 cases. Put it this way, if there were 10 or 11 or 13 million undocumented 80% lowers without serial numbers on it as they're trying to make it a requirement, or 10 or 11 million undocumented illegal bump stocks out there, or short-barreled shotguns in violation of the National Firearms Act, there is no chance the ATF could do anything about it. So ultimately, even if we're focusing on state and local action to help nullify, really it gets down to what John Dickinson, the penman of the Revolution, called the supreme sovereignty of the people. It is the people's duty to learn how to exercise their rights, whether the government likes it or not. And when they do, there's nothing they can do about it. Let's look at weed. I mean, if there weren't every single time someone has lit up a joint in response to federal prohibition over the last however many decades, they've chipped away at federal prohibition against the drug war. And they were doing that for decades before states ever did anything like California's Proposition 215. So ultimately, it's about the people being willing to defend liberty, and they love liberty. Unfortunately, we're surrounded by people who hate both, but that's another story.
I like to use the speed limit as kind of an analogy for that. Nice. Yeah, you know, if you go out and drive on your local highway, and you'll see, you know, here in Tampa, it's 55 miles per hour. If you go around I-275, there ain't nobody going that speed. Nobody's going 55 miles an hour. I mean, the flow of traffic is 65. So the sign says 55. That's the law, but they can't enforce it. They don't even try to enforce it. So the same thing happens when people, you know, as Bolton said, smoke weed. And so really it does.
Sometimes
talk about,
they eat it.
Well, that's true. I'm more of an eater.
Or vape it.
Yeah, right.
But here's the bottom line. It really starts with that human action, right?
Yeah.
We can talk about state and local nullification and using government as kind of using power sources against each other. And that's an important strategy, but always it comes down to a willingness of people to stand up and say no to government. You know, we talk about the Rosa Parks method, and we all know this story. She refused to give up her seat on the bus. And, you know, as the story ended up, she actually ended up getting arrested. So it's not that it's without cost. But what she did, her willingness to stand up, basically lit a fire that ultimately consumed Jim Crow. So, you know, it takes that kind of courage, that kind of individual human action at the foundation of everything that we're doing and talking about. You know, ultimately, it's decentralizing down to the individuals what we would like to see.
Yeah. And when you're talking about how, you know, Rosa Parks got arrested, a lot of people want to think that all you have to do is pass some law or have some constitutional amendment and everything's going to magically be better. But we live under the largest government, the largest empire in the history of the planet. Anyone who thinks there's a silver bullet is either lying to you, scamming you, or totally underestimating what we face today. Thomas Jefferson said, "We aren't going to go from despotism to liberty in a feather bed." And Thomas Paine reminded us in the fourth of his American Crisis somewhere in 1777. He said, those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it. So freedom comes with risk. But as Mike has put out in a recent video, freedom requires responsibility. And the responsibility is on the people to learn how to defend their own constitution and their own liberty. Again, whether the government wants us to or not.
Yeah, Pice, Jefferson.
You got anything? I mean, me and Mike are gonna just talk all day here. Like...
that's the plan, man. No, one thing I love about the one thing I really love about the decentralization strategy and the nullification strategy is, you know, there's a lot of talk about overall strategy and how liberty has to infect the culture, and I think that's key. And I really think that the nullification strategy is the thing that marries the two together, the political activity of nullification itself, and the fact that there has to be something that springs up from the community, springs up from the culture at that local level, at that state level, that makes nullification viable in the first place. And I think the more that we can kind of set out about this strategy and you know, do these things at the local level, you know, I've said this a lot. We're being trained and conditioned to think that culture is something that is imposed, you know, from academia down, from Hollywood down. And that's just not true. It's not true. It comes from the family. It comes from the family and comes up through the community collectively in that sense. So when you nullify at the local level, when you take action at the local level, the culture is what you are dealing with in a very real and very organic sense. And that's where we have to do our work. And if we can create these kind of decentralized pockets of resistance, legal resistance, political resistance, one, that is organically changing the culture. And two, we can create an environment where, you know, the feds can't really enforce anything in any uniform manner.
Yeah, and I know Angela was talking about
coalition. I was about to say that.
Yeah, Angela was talking about coalition building. And really, if you think about it, the modern nullification movement started with passage of Proposition 215, the Compassionate Use Act here in California in 1996. Now, when people think nullification, they always want us to think it's just a right-wing thing. It's only for guns and things like that. But really, California is not going to nullify any federal gun control. In fact, they're probably going to try to pressure the feds to put gun control, more gun control on everyone else. But that doesn't mean we don't want to encourage the Californians to continue expanding this nullification of the drug war. Like, for example, Senate Bill 58 this year will legalize psilocybin, for example. And there's another piece of legislation that I just found this week in New York State, of all places, that would not only legalize or decriminalize psilocybin, it specifically bans state and local law enforcement from helping the feds enforce any prohibition against it. So we can take things like that in the lefty blue states. They're chipping away at centralized power, and it encourages people in Missouri. I see Hunter, the Parmesan cheese expert over in the chat on YouTube. I got to mention, this screen name is amazing. But he said, I'm so glad we got SAPA here in Missouri. Missouri passed the Second Amendment Preservation Act back in 2021, banning state and local law enforcement from participating in the enforcement of a wide range of federal gun control measures, past, present, and future. But if it wasn't for the groundwork that was laid prior to that against the drug war in states like California and Oregon and elsewhere, that may not have happened. So we can oppose everything else. Trust me, I live here. We can oppose almost everything else that happens in Sacramento, but we can push them forward on issues that we know they are on board with us on. And then maybe they, I know, Michael, you were talking about this with Angela as well, then maybe they build trust with us on other issues. We've had this happen over the years many times. Oh, those dudes are so crazy. But we like what they do on surveillance. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, maybe we should listen to what they have to say on something else, because they've been so hardcore on this issue for so many years.
That reminds me of a story that I like to tell. When I was involved in the local surveillance issue in Lexington, Kentucky, I got sued. Open records, long story, not worth going into here, but I was involved in a 2.5-year lawsuit. ACLU of Kentucky represented me in this lawsuit. And, you know, mostly people that tend toward the left in that organization. But I had the opportunity to get to know the folks that worked in the Kentucky ACLU, in particular their policy person. We were having lunch one day talking, and you know, of course, first we're talking about the case. Then as the lunch goes on, we start talking about political philosophy a little bit. Had a great conversation. She gets up from the table and looks at me and goes, huh, maybe I'm an anarchist. So you talk about infecting the culture, you know, by working with folks that are in other areas for, as far as political philosophy, rubbing shoulders with them, working with them, building that trust. It opens the door to talk about these broader topics. And as Bolden said, it builds this trust and it gives us opportunities to kind of move beyond even the issues over time as we build that trust and show them.
And you know why they represented you is because a few years earlier, you and I, we went to ACLU headquarters New York, and we went there to meet with them on state level surveillance privacy issues. And at one point they're like, ha ha ha, they thought it was so funny. Well, you guys are into that whole anti-gun control or Obamacare stuff too. Ha ha. And we're like, yeah, yeah. Okay. Let's focus on supporting privacy, defeating the surveillance state. And so you build this relationship, you find common ground. The left, which is where I came from originally, I used to call myself a proud Trotskyite. I mean, I don't even know if I was a good one, but I used to claim the mantle. But that's where I came from mentally and, you know, in my social life. I'm probably still there. But if you don't find common ground, the left is so good at finding common ground and ignoring the differences until they want to go after you for the differences. So if we can actually build those coalitions, and if everybody else sucks on everything, I mean, when you're a libertarian, you're better than the left on all the left's issues, and you're better than the right on all the right's issues. So it's easy to win some people over on some issues, and if they don't come over on the Federal Reserve, then maybe you find other people to work with on the Federal Reserve. And, you know, it's just building, getting wins, showing people rather than just sharing books, showing people that freedom works, freedom is better, and that's what we want more of.
Always makes me think of the Jefferson quote. We use it all the time. The ground of liberty is to be won by inches. Paraphrase there, but that's basically what he said. You know, I think oftentimes we get caught up in wanting that big, you know, we want to win the presidency or some foolishness like that. It's gained by inches. You take what ground you may, and then you work to take a little bit more ground. It's just like, you know, any type of military strategy. It's always
Jefferson was a great strategist. He specifically said, you know, it takes time to convince men of what is even for their own good. And there is no better way to show people what is for their own good than to actually show them rather than tell them. And when we talk about things like nullifying the war on cannabis, for example, it's getting close to that. Eventually, the feds are going to back off and pretend that they'd shut down prohibition because they can't enforce it anymore without the help of states and localities and people complying with them. So you never would have thought 10 years ago that Oklahoma and Missouri and Utah and West Virginia and all of these red states would have had any type of legalization, medical or recreational or otherwise. And I think to myself, you know, as we see states like Missouri with the Second Amendment Preservation Act and a similar thing happening in Montana and Arizona, would it be possible that maybe in 10 or 20 years, some blue state or some purple state might follow the lead? Because it was that way on the war on drugs. And the only way we'll ever know is if we push and we get some W's on the board and keep pushing no matter what they do. You can never give up because the empire wants to crush us at every turn.
Yep.
So let me ask you guys, with the midterms that we just had, I know there was some really interesting stuff that happened during those midterms. My favorite of which was Colorado passed a pretty radical bill Colorado passed a pretty radical bill to not only decriminalize psychedelics and allow for the cultivation and trade, not sale, but trade. But they also snuck in there a bill to allow for psychedelic clinics with a roadmap to, you know, start with psilocybin and then move towards ayahuasca and move towards ibogaine. Yeah. You know, but there were some others as well. What are some of the big victories from 2022? And what are some of the most maybe prudent or pressing issues that are, or opportunities for libertarians to kind of push on nullification for 23?
I don't know if Meharry's going to know. But I can't think off the top of my head wins in election season. I know we reported on a bunch of local level decriminalization measures in Ohio and Texas, for example, where you had ballot measures, right, Mike, where they were doing decriminalization efforts. There was also a ban on no-knock warrants in one town in Texas. But what our focus is more on pushing forward from where we are right now. And that is, some of the big issues, of course, are the right to keep and bear arms, protecting the Second Amendment, passing similar legislation to what happened in Missouri, Montana, and Arizona to protect the Second Amendment, well, to ban state and local law enforcement from assisting in federal gun control enforcement. And then ultimately, it is up to the people to learn again how to exercise those rights. Because if you ban a state from helping enforce federal gun control, if everyone still complies with the act, it doesn't change anything. So ultimately, it gets down to people being willing to resist laws that shouldn't exist in the first place.
Yeah, the one ballot measure that I remember off the top of my head was the Montana. They amended their constitution to include electronic data.
A privacy measure.
Yeah, and so they will include electronic data with papers and persons in terms of searching, which will automatically require a warrant for getting into people's electronic data. So that was a good win at the state level. And then we had a couple of other states that legalized marijuana. But as Bolden said, really it's really about changing the attitude. You know, so many people have this mentality that, well, government says it, you know, we got to do it. And I think as much as anything,
Just scared. They have scared. All the guns. And as soon as I do something I'm not allowed to do, they're going to come and throw me in jail.
And they're going
to
roll the tanks into. Yeah.
Right.
James Otis Jr. In 1767, we could call him the founding father of the Fourth Amendment. He specifically said there is nothing that will do more to destroy liberty than a prevailing opinion that it is better to tamely submit rather than boldly assert our rights and privileges. And that's a paraphrase, but the mentality is, as long as people are willing to submit, there's no reason for government to ever back off, and they will continue adding more and more and more. Now, that doesn't mean you stick your neck out at every single term. Jefferson, after passage of the Kentucky Resolutions of 1798, the very next day, he sent a letter to his buddy James Madison in Virginia, and he said, hey, here's what we passed. We should hold to all of these principles, but we should push as far as events will render prudent. We can't always take things to the level that we want to. It's the same message that he had earlier, like 8 years earlier, that Mike mentioned a few minutes ago. The ground of liberty is to be gained by inches, because it takes time to convince people of what is for their own good.
Yeah, and another thing, kind of in the same vein of like the cultural spreading of this and coming from the ground up, is people also are social animals, and somebody has to be first. Somebody has to do something first before other people do it. And so the more of you see of these local level, especially nullification measures, I think that fear starts to go away. You know, and everybody else starts to get brave, because, you know, and people already know this subconsciously. Like, we know this when you see like half of people don't file their federal income tax every year. Now, maybe you're throwing the dice, but you don't see, mass invasions of half the population over that. You don't see all these weed legal states getting invaded by the feds. You don't see,
they certainly a little bit. Tried. They certainly tried. And I remember back in early 97, my buddy Nicole, she calls me, she's like, hey, Bolden, you want to go to the weed store? And I'm like, the what? I had just moved to Southern California the year prior, and I wasn't really up to speed on the stuff that I'm up to speed on now. And maybe in 10 years, I'll be like, I'm dumb today. But I'm like, okay, but I was scared shitless. I'm like, we're going to an illegal drug store? But over time, the more that you see people do this, over time, in just Los Angeles alone, there was like 1,800 cannabis outlets, cannabis stores, which is more than 7-Eleven and Starbucks combined. When you're in that type of a situation, we have proof that markets are more powerful than government. And when enough people say no to government laws, regulations, and mandates, and enough states pass laws backing them up, what's the result? Mike, you want to take that one?
result is stuff stops happening. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking of the so-called constitutional carry, which I hate that term. So yeah, I like to use permitless carry. But it creates a market where people get used to carrying firearms, knowing people are carrying firearms. And when the world doesn't collapse, I think that ultimately creates an environment that makes it much harder for the federal government to enforce gun control, because it's like, well, God, we've been carrying these guns around forever.
You want to get rid of them. Now my neighbor is a bad guy for owning this thing that I know that I've walked around, gone for power walks with my neighbor every 3 days for the last 5 years. And now he's a criminal just for doing the same thing. And that's something that we used to miss out on a lot. And Heiss, I know you talk about culture a lot. We used to miss out on that and just focus on the technical part of the legislation and the strategy. But as we kind of got into the whole permitless carry, the constitutional carry issue, for example, we were kind of seeing this as part of that process, because you really have to have a 1-2 punch. Samuel Adams told us that all would be free if they A, valued freedom, and B, defended as they ought. And the way you learn to value freedom is as you experience it. And the more that the culture in a neighborhood, in a town, in a city or a state values and exercises their rights, they value freedom, the more of a chance you'll have that people will be willing to stick their necks out and defend it when it's under attack, which is probably constantly. Someone said, nice Meep shirt. It is a reference to my little bird, but I really appreciate that.
You know, if you don't like guns, raw milk, same concept.
Yeah.
You know, if you legalize or open the door for raw milk sales in a local area or a state, all of a sudden it becomes much harder for the FDA to regulate it at the federal level. CBD is still illegal according to the federal government.
In food, can't consume CBD supposedly. The FDA, even though the DEA no longer has jurisdiction, the FDA says there's only one approved item. It's Epidiolex. It's kind of a synthetic CBD. Supposedly, you're not supposed to be able to get it in a coffee like I can do walking down the street. You're not supposed to be able to have it in food. It's totally illegal, but they don't have the person power to be able to enforce this when so many millions of people are like, well, this is just part of daily life.
Right. And everybody's used to being able to get it.
We need the same thing with firearms, though. Yeah. We need the same thing with firearms.
Yep.
All right. So sorry about that, guys. I had to send the link to one of our next guests.
What? You weren't paying attention? Should we read
Not as much as I should, but had to get the next guest up.
Who's next?
Diego Rivera, he's one of them. We got Kevin Matthews and we got Patrick Holland. You guys talked a lot about the Missouri gun measure, and he's with
Patrick's
the Missouri.
Doing great work in Missouri, and it's not, maybe he'll talk a little bit. I know you guys are talking Defend the Guard, and there's the Defend the Guard Act that was filed in Missouri, but there's also Senate Bill 100, which is a sound money legislation. Mm-hmm. It puts gold and silver as legal tender
That's why he's here. You're spoiling it, Bolden.
All right, so yeah.
Well, we got to cycle you guys out, man. These are half hour segments. So, you know, you make your plugs, man. I mean,
go to projectdecentralizedrevolution.com. That's my plug. I'm grateful for you guys having us here. Happy New Year. We're not here to promote our own shit today. We're here to make sure to help that you guys keep building this strong foundation to go further. And I know I'm speaking for Mike here, but we're both very excited to participate in this tour, get out of the house, and hang out with some people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, appreciate you guys. Like I said, you're a big inspiration for us. Go, you know, sign up, support the 10thAmendmentCenter.com. Bolden there also hosts the Path to Liberty podcast, and might screw this one up, but Meharry also hosts the Shift Gold Radio podcast.